the snow, Christmas bells are ringing. Joyous voices, sweet and clear, sing the sad of heart to cheer. Ding dong, ding dong, Christmas bells are ringing.
Jerry Bader Show 1007. In the last half hour, I talked about a hoax. We never did follow up on Elan Gale. This was back on Monday. He revealed this. The hoax isn't funny anymore. Elan Gale and the problem of reality online. Here's a bit of non-news that in the viral click-based economy acquired a life larger than it deserved. On a delayed Thanksgiving Day flight, two high-strung, attention-seeking passengers, ABC producer Elan Gale and middle-aged squeaky wheel Diane, got into an argument. Gale live tweeted it. BuzzFeed jumped on the tweets. The story appeared on ABC, The Huffington Post, The Guardian, The San Francisco Chronicle, and E! Online. SAS penned lengthy think pieces. Gale, otherwise known or not for his work on The Bachelor and Bachelorette, saw his Twitter following balloon up by 140,000 people. Then, late Monday night, he dropped a little bomb on all his new fans. Diane was fake. The whole fight was a hoax. Not only did one random man with a Twitter account convince major mainstream media outlets to cover an argument on a plane, one of hundreds of such arguments that undoubtedly occur every day, but he convinced them to cover an argument on a plane that did not even happen. And we talked about it here. Guess what he does? He tweets a picture of an empty chair. Here's Diana sitting in a chair. Let's see. If this plot line sounds familiar, that's because it is. It's not so different from Jimmy Kimmel's stunt in September, in which he staged a wildly popular YouTube video of a girl twerking a bit too hard and setting herself on fire, or the Comedy Central video fake a few months earlier, which involved a pig saving a goat from a petting zoo pond. I will tell you, Tao's girlfriend. Yeah. Manti Tao's girlfriend. I will tell you that I did not doubt the reality of this one only because Elan Gale came off sounding like such a bleep that I never considered for a moment that he would do that to himself. More on this a little later in the show. However, we need to debate the issues of the day with I Say Liberal, He Says Progressive talk show hosts of the Mighty 790 KFGO, Mike McFeely. Mike, how you doing?
Was that Clint Eastwood who tweeted the photo of the empty chair? Or who was that did that?
Well, you heard, I assume, you heard about this, right?
Actually, no, I haven't. I was listening intently. I've been busy all morning.
Did you hear the original story of the guy who tweeted his dispute live time on the Thanksgiving flight?
Oh, okay. Yeah, and that's it. Yeah, we live in a world, Jerry, as you know, that is, there's all kinds of these stunts going on. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of things going on. And we've seen them right here in Fargo. There's been one that went viral right here in Fargo where national media were writing stories and doing stories about a Christmas letter that,
yep,
whatever, may or may not have been real, you know, but nobody ever bothered to try to talk to the woman who allegedly wrote the letter. They just went ahead and it's embarrassing. Somebody who was in the mainstream media and still am, you know, for 30-some years of my life, it's embarrassing what we've become in some ways.
Here's what's interesting about this one, though. Somebody wrote a blog post claiming to know Diane and said she had cancer.
Oh,
Was he part of that too, or is that a separate hoax?
It's at some point I think that the mainstream media and the alternative media or new media, we need to stop paying attention to these things unless they can be corroborated. And maybe it's all so new, maybe it's all so easy that we just take it and go with it. Not we, you and I, because you and I are smarter than that, quite honestly, Jerry.
I did bite on this one.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that, so I apologize.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you suspected this one from the start?
No, I said I had not heard it. I'll be honest. I had not heard about it. I've been running around.
That's fine. Okay, so you missed that one completely. All right, Speaking of stunts, I've been meaning to ask you this. I think it was a Bismarck station, I can't remember, that did a full newscast with Ron Burgundy.
Yes.
Have they taken any crap for that? I have been just skewering them.
No, and the Los Angeles Times wrote a piece for that, and I talked about it some on my show. Why? Why are you skewering them? It's a TV station in Bismarck. It's clearly it's Ron Burgundy. He's an actor. He's a character. We get all that, but it just didn't bother me that much. It was clearly a bit. It was clearly a gag. It was clearly a stunt. They weren't trying to fool anybody.
Well,
it was just a way to get publicity.
Okay, so there, you have no problem with the TV station allowing a fictional character to co-anchor a newscast?
I mean, again, it's Bismarck, North Dakota. Would it be different for me if it was ABC News and Diane Sawyer?
Why do you think? Exactly, but... Mike. Why do you think they did it in Bismarck? Nobody else would do it.
Exactly right. I just don't. And here's the take I had on my program, Jerry, was the Los Angeles Times comes out and just rips them for selling out and for, oh, my God, this is so embarrassing. This is the same newspaper that 1 week ago sold their entire front page to Disney to promote a movie. Not a wraparound, not an advertisement separate from the paper itself, but they sold almost the entire A1 page of the Los Angeles Times to Disney, and oh, by the way, wrote a glowing review of the movie that Disney bought an ad for, and now they're going to get up on their high horse and start slamming Bismarck, North Dakota, of all places, because they allowed Ron Burgundy to read the news for them?
They allowed Will Ferrell to read the news for them. That's exactly my point. He's a fictional character. They allowed a comedian to read the news.
I just wasn't that offended. I mean, you can be offended all you want. It just didn't bother me all that much.
I'm not going to defend the LA Times.
I thought it was funny. I like Anchorman. I like the movie. I've been to Bismarck. I know it ain't exactly New York or Los Angeles. It wasn't that offensive to me.
I'm not going to defend the LA Times, by the way. All right, I want to pick up on this.
Shocker.
Yeah, a spirited debate that you and I had on your show yesterday. And that was about the fast food walkouts. And there were a number of them in Wisconsin yesterday, Milwaukee, Madison, and Wausau. I'm going to want that audio, Jason. And where Mike and I really got into it, though, is I said the people who walk off the job should be fired. Mike couldn't believe that I felt that way. I want to do two things here, Mike, and then I'll tell you what I'll bring in. The chance in Wausau, Wisconsin, that's C-H-A-N-T-S, the chance of we can't survive on 725, and 15 in Union filled the air. We can't survive on 725. Then the Green Bay TV station, WBAY, and this is just a snippet of their story, had this.
Thousands of fast food workers at restaurant chains across the country walked off the job today demanding higher wages. A typical worker at a fast food restaurant makes minimum wage, which is currently $7.25 an hour. That adds up to less than $19,000 a year, which is below the federal poverty level for a family of three.
Live on that, and some people in here have two or three jobs, and that's not acceptable.
I feel like we should be making more. We're working so hard. It's very difficult, especially when you have kids to raise.
Protesters.
All right. In addition to that, there was a sign that says we're worth more. Why, Mike? Why are they worth more than they're being paid?
Because they need to earn a living, Jerry. They're working in some cases a full-time job. They're working as hard as they can. They're doing what they do. They deserve more for what they're doing. And I think where you and I separated yesterday was this belief that, you know, why the arbitrary number? Why not just pay them, name the number, $75,000 a year, $100,000 a year for flipping hamburgers? And I said, I don't believe that. That's not right. But why can't we give them a little bit more? Why, if McDonald's is making untold billions of dollars, why can they not afford to pay their workers, who apparently they value and they trust, or maybe they don't if they're paying them $7.25? Why can't they pay them a few bucks more? It's fair. It's what we should be doing in America, is making sure that everybody can at least survive on a full-time job or a 30-hour-a-week job.
But, okay, what do you mean we should make sure? See, here's the point. You say they deserve it. I asked you why they're worth more. You're not because they need it. You're not worth more because you need it, Mike. If I overextend myself or if I make bad life choices and I need more money, that's not my employer's problem. But if you think the government is going to improve your lot in life, you're never going to be very happy. And by the way, I used to be one of the people that believed that. You have to improve yourself. You have to find a better job. And I know your answer is, well, you can't just do that. The reality is that is the way you get ahead in the world. And trying to coerce this money out of an employer is just simply not practical. And you can't extrapolate it out or you would bankrupt the economy.
But we have been, as you say, coerced this money out of our employers, Jerry, for how many decades now? It has not ruined the economy. It has not sent this country spiraling down into the oblivion of the world. It actually has, when minimum wage kept up with the cost of living and kept up with inflation, to some extent, it did raise people out of poverty, and it did raise them into at least the lower middle class where they could survive in this nation. We've gotten away from that. We've gotten away from saying, look, we have to provide some sort of protection for the people at the lowest end of the economic scale, or we're going to have this massive underclass of people that can't survive in the world.
And I will concede this to you, that there is, I think there is mixed data on what exactly the minimum wage does to the economy. On that point, I will agree. But the reality is, you know, again, I think my argument is valid that it's arbitrary, Mike. You think there's somewhere there's a comfortable number that you're okay with. It's like any other liberal argument. If you extend it out to its logical conclusion, it just doesn't work. Yeah, the number is arbitrary. If you can say, and you don't agree with 15 because you think it's too much. Okay, so you say 11 or 12. Well, again, that's arbitrary. When you start saying, here's how much, when government starts deciding how much that people can afford to pay their employees, that's a problem. And yes, we become accustomed to the minimum wage. But what happens is, yeah, you could say it started out meager, and I remember mine, Mike, $2.62 an hour. But then it progresses and progresses. And now, as you said, and by the way, I agree with you on this, the manufacturing middle class is gone. That I agree with you on that. But you're not going to replace it with the service industry by thinking you're going to squeeze money out of it that just isn't there.
Well, and what scares me, and you're right, that we talked yesterday about the manufacturing sector being gone, and you and I are of the similar age where we got a start at, my first job was minimum wage for $3.25 an hour at Olson Produce in Alexandria, Minnesota. And for you and I, Jerry, those were temporary jobs. They were jobs that were going to move on to the next thing. They helped buy, you know, my beer and my TV or whatever I was, you know, going to buy at that time. But the fact is that today's fast food worker is over 20 years old, sometimes raising a child. 68%, as a matter of fact, I'm reading some stats here, obviously, are the primary wage earners in their families. I mean, 68% of people working at fast food restaurants are the primary wage earners in their family. It's a different world. It's not the same world as it was 25 years ago when you and I worked at minimum wage jobs to buy whatever during high school or college. We have people trying to survive on this. And that to me is scary. And I can't imagine that type of world. And if we can give them $3 an hour more, $5 an hour more, that is not going to crush our economy, Jerry. It's going to hopefully lift them up somewhat and maybe push them on, like we all hope to do, to get a better job someday.
But I don't think artificially inflating the job that they have now, which really doesn't take any training, does push them to get another job. All right, we're just about out of time. So, as you know, I have my charity bet with a listener. Dude, I'm taking the Falcons over the Packers.
How did I do for you last time?
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for your help. I appreciate the hell out of that.
I'm not going anywhere. You'll never ask me again what football game to pick or what team to pick.
Yeah, I didn't ask. I'm just telling you.
I raked you over unintentionally last time.
Hey, one
Vikings were the worst football team in the world. My God.
One quick question. You did a lot of sports writing, right?
Okay,
newspaper. I interview Mike McCarthy every Friday, and he said something today. In fact, Jason, can you pull that up quick? Do you have a minute, Mike? I'll go.
Yeah,
long.
I do.
Okay, if you got a minute, I can go a little long on this segment. Just play the first question that I asked McCarthy in the beginning of the answer, Jason. Go ahead. Friday before a Sunday game, that means we talk, as always, with the coach, Mike McCarthy. Coach, We'll start with a question you're probably tired of being asked, and that's the Aaron Rodgers question. He did a little more in individual drills, practice with pads. You said yesterday he'll have another scan. Hasn't been cleared, but hasn't been ruled out. Any timetable for that decision at all? Possible game time? Anything you can tell us?
We'll take it up till today, and you know, no later than tomorrow. You know, the biggest thing is, you know, Aaron's played a lot of football here. Obviously, you know, we have a relationship. You know, I owe it to him to take the full week to try to see if he can play. So,
right, he owes it to Aaron. Does that sound like he's kind of letting the player decide?
It kind of does, more in terms maybe of respect, though, don't you think? Then
I don't know. I didn't know how
allowing Aaron Rodgers to make that decision, because once you go down that road, that's a scary place to go, because that's where the Minnesota Twins went a couple of years ago with Joe Mauer, their highly paid catcher. They essentially let Joe Mauer decide when he was going to come back, and shockingly, he just kind of didn't come back for quite a while.
Yeah.
So that's a dangerous place to be.
Well, that's not the concern with Rodgers, though. It's that he would rush himself back. It's not that he would lollygag. I guarantee that, and that's my concern. I'm someone who did a lot of sports writing, wanted your take. All right, I got to get out of here. Mike, have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Thanks, Jerry.
All right, and we did go long, so we got to do this right now, Jason. I know. I got you all screwed up over there. I messed you up. It's 10:22.
For all things Jerry Bader, jerrybadershow.com.